And I'm your host, John Rush, Rush to Reason, KLZ 560. Hour number three is upon us. And Bob's commentary we just heard a moment ago, of course, is pre-recorded because that DA already made that decision and that police officer has been arrested. I just want to make a note of that to make sure you all knew that those are pre-recorded. So Bob does not do those live. That was done most likely this morning before he heard that news. Michelle Snyder joining us now. Mish Snyder, we call her. And Mish, welcome back. How are you today?
I'm great, John. How are you?
I'm good. Always a joy to have you. And she is the author of the book, Plant Your Money Tree, A Guide to Growing Your Wealth, also on marketgage.com. All right, lots going on this week. And to me, it's still amazing that the stock market and that side of things is continuing to do as well as it is with all of the, you know, I guess because of the cash we're injecting in, it's doing so well. But to me, it's just, I'm still mind boggled at that.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone in that sentiment.
All right, so talk to us about Coinbase. And for those that don't know what Coinbase is, explain and explain how that is probably going to affect the markets this week.
Well, Coinbase is the exchange up until today, actually, where you went to trade any of the alternative currencies from Bitcoin to Ethereum to Litecoin to Dogecoin and all of the multiple other coins that are out there now.
Okay.
So what they did was they did a direct listing, which means they had no underwriters involved, like what usually happens when there is an initial public offering, and they went public on NASDAQ today. It was a very highly anticipated event because it was NASDAQ. There's a lot of tech involvement in that. As we know, blockchain technology is tech. And so the anticipation ahead of it was, first of all, we saw a tremendous surge in a lot of the alternative currencies ahead of it. And number two is NASDAQ itself went to new all-time highs as of yesterday. So everybody waited with bated breath for it to finally open, which happens at around noon Mountain Time. And it immediately opened up to about $100 billion valuation. It traded up to about 440, dropped all the way down to about 315, settling somewhere around 326 in the after hours. It's up again. And this is now where you're going to go if you are just your average retail trader who's been petrified to trade Bitcoin or any of the currencies up until this point. You now know you can do this through this instrument, this COIN, which is the very appropriate symbol.
Yes. Now, does it make it for those that are, for those you were just talking to when it comes to actually trading some of the cryptocurrency, does this make that safer given what's just happened?
Well, I think that the jury's out on that. So right now, today, obviously you had a lot of jockeying ahead of time. People were actually selling their physical currency ahead of it. It was the huge surge of buying for people who probably wanted to be first in, thinking it might go to $600. And then, of course, the sell-off, which is exactly what you expect on pretty much any day, opening day of a publicly traded instrument, that type of volatility. In terms of what has to happen from here is in order, I think, to get, like, for example, my friend who is 90 years old called me yesterday and asked me what Bitcoin is. So that's kind of how far-reaching it
wow.
is. In order to get people like him, who loves to trade, by the way, and other people, and I would say excluding maybe the very young who have been trading through Coinbase directly as the app, to get them interested, we're going to need to see a couple of things. We're going to need to see the volatility calm down. So therefore, some level of stability in price over the next week or so. We're going to have to see also that not only that, but we're going to have to see the price maintain at a level that doesn't sound like the thing is going to crash. You don't want people to think, this is the bubble. I just knew it. And now that it's gone public, the bubble's going to burst. You want people to say, wow, this is really legitimate. And I have now a opportunity to invest through NASDAQ, SEC guidelines. I don't have to throw my credit card into some app
right.
that I don't understand. And I think that's really going to be seen over the next couple of days is how much retail investors we get in. But that's separate from the actual alt currency and blockchain technology area, which truly is going to advance regardless
right.
of what happens with this instrument.
Yeah, I'm glad you just said that. And I want to make sure everybody understands this. Coinbase, make sure that I explain this right, Michelle. Coinbase is the trading instrument to be able to buy, sell, and handle cryptocurrency across the board. It is not itself cryptocurrency.
Absolutely correct. It's just like buying an instrument, rather than buying a specific instrument in NASDAQ 100, you buy the actual NASDAQ 100, which then gives you exposure to the 100 of stocks that are in the NASDAQ index. This is the same kind of thing.
Yeah, they are basically the pooling company, if you would, or that company that you're going to buy and sell or even have them hold your coin if you need to. That's what they do.
Right, and it's going to be weighted based on currency just like any other ETF type of situation. So, for example, Bitcoin will be obviously the most heavily weighted, and it traded up to about 64,000. And Ethereum will probably be second, which is trading up close to 2,500. And then you'll have all the other instruments in there as well, and you might see some rotation of that weighting over time. But what was also interesting is that that's only the first exchange to go public. Now there's conversation about Binance. So Binance is another type of exchange that you can trade crypto in. It's second to obviously Coinbase and a far second, but it also had a tremendous surge in terms of valuation over the last few days. So now there's chatter that that too, at some point, will go public. And so what you're going to start to see is more healthy competition.
Right. Good.
Yeah, that's a good thing. We always like that in the market.
Yes. And I don't know this answer. Maybe you do. But there are, to my knowledge, at least a half a dozen of these particular types of companies, I guess you could call them, that handle the buying and selling of Bitcoin. Am I right in saying that, or is there even more than six?
There is definitely a lot. One that comes to mind immediately is eToro, which is actually an Israeli company. And the reason why I know that right off the top of my head is that there's a SPAC called FinTech Valuation Corp that is looking to partner with eToro. That's sort of trying to trade in tandem with the actual cryptocurrency space, but it hasn't actually become a public company yet. It's still just a SPAC.
Okay.
So that's something that we've been keeping an eye on, too. But, yeah, there'll be more and more and more of this. I mean, blockchain technology is incredible. The applications of this is just going to continue to emerge. In medical field, in the music field, they're looking at it as a way to track royalties. They're looking at it for cross-border payments, real estate using Internet of Things systems, on and on and on and on and on. This is really what the dot-com boom was before we got to the big bubble in 2000. This is the same kind of thing. This is the new Internet technology on steroids.
Yeah, I agree. I saw something today, and I was trying to pull up the article to get your opinion on it, and it was a Fed chair talking about what they're looking at when it comes to interest rates and bond purchases and so on. I'm sorry I don't have that in front of me. Are you familiar with that?
Well, there's been a tremendous amount of Fed chatter over the last couple of days, and actually over the last couple of weeks.
I just found it. So, by the way, I just found it. Headline reads, it's the Wall Street Journal, central bank will begin reducing bond purchases well before raising interest rates, Powell said. What does that mean?
So basically what they've been doing to remain extremely accommodative, since they can't really do anything more with the rates. I mean, they could, but they certainly aren't willing to go below where it is right now, or
right,
below zero, basically, is they have been going into the market and buying bonds every week. Tremendous amount of bonds, like $80 billion worth of bonds each week. And that has left a lot of liquidity in the market, number one. And number two is, if you look at junk bonds.
Okay, right, and time out real quick. Explain why that, I know, but for those that are listening, explain why that creates liquidity.
It creates liquidity because what they're doing is they're buying basically the yields of companies that are rated junk, because they get a high rate of return. It's like the ultimate risk-on environment for the market. Risk-on meaning that you can actually have risk. So that's what they've been doing, and as a result, it's kept the interest rates low, it's kept the yields low. We've had a couple of spikes here in the shorter-term yields, but at this point, the Fed hasn't really been concerned about that. So when they say that what they're going to do is stop the bond buying program before they actually do something to the rates. Essentially, what they're saying is we don't have to keep buying back these high yield, very risky bonds anymore. We can step that back because the market doesn't need that level of liquidity to protect some of these companies that may not be as high fluent as, say, Amazon or NVIDIA, you know, companies right. like that. And that's really what they're talking about. But they're not doing it yet, or at least we haven't seen evidence of it yet.
Right. Okay. That's all good. Where do you see things headed? I mean, everybody talks, and, you know, I hear everything because people, listeners, send me, you know, everything you could ever think of from, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly. And, you know, there's talks of a great recession coming, a great depression even coming, yet there's others that will say, nope, they're injecting too much money into it. There's no way that's happening. What do you think?
Well, what I think really is that we're going to continue to see this growth, obviously, as we still continue to come out of the pandemic, and we'll go to some level of normalcy. Of course, normalcy will continue to change. Like, for example, today, some of the airlines came out and said business travel will never be the same, even though people will get back on planes for more leisure-type travel. It will adjust. What I'm worried about, and it's a true worry, is a stagflation environment. I'm not looking recession, depression, and I'm certainly not looking at this great GDP, 6%, 6.5% growth. I think those people are a little bit in a different reality. What I see here is the stagflation potential, which means what we're seeing already, John, we've talked about this. Every commodity price has gone up.
Right.
From wood to steel.
180% on wood, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the CPI and the PPI came out, so gas has even gone up 9.1% in a month. And we have oil now going up and sugar going up and wheat and corn and soybeans. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. There isn't one commodity that I can think of off the top of my head, except for maybe gold.
Right.
And I think that's actually an aberration at this point. I'm actually very bullish gold here because I can't kill it. Anyway, the point is that as these commodity prices go up, as the dollar keeps drifting lower, this is an inflationary environment. What makes it a stagflationary environment is if we cannot get to tremendous growth beyond this return to whatever our version of normalcy is.
Okay.
That's what stagflation is.
And that's your biggest worry?
That is my biggest worry.
And by the way, I think I would agree with you on that one. I'm right there with you.
Oh. Okay. Yep. I shouldn't be happy that you're agreeing with me because this is not a good situation for anybody.
No, it's not. And you know, these are those things that if you and I end up being correct, there are certain things, you know, individuals, listeners can do to, you know, stave some of that off. And I guess give us a couple of ideas on what people could be doing to make sure that if you and I are right and that happens, what do they do?
Well, number one is they should definitely be looking at their 401s and their exposure to equities if that happens, because equities will go down, no doubt about that. And the Fed will be forced potentially, more than potentially, to try to do something to control it if it goes crazy, and that would be to raise rates, which, of course, we know would be negative to the market. So I would definitely make sure that you are following what your own portfolio is and really trying not to continue to buy these very high valuations. Number two is I would be looking at some of these commodities. They've made it very easy to trade through these ETFs, gold being the classic example. We're buying gold here. We're buying gold here. We have obviously a risk parameter in our mind. We don't really want to see cash gold break below 1700. But if it gets through 1750 and then through 1800, I think gold will be a tremendous opportunity in a good way as we start to maybe raise more cash equity-wise, is to actually have more exposure to silver and gold, and maybe even some of these food commodities as well. If you look at corn right now, it's beginning to go parabolic.
Right. What about some of the companies where, you know, hard assets are traded or bought, like, you know, commercial property or even residential real estate, apartment buildings, things like that, where you're not actually owning the building, but you're in a pool of others that are? What about those type of investments?
I would be cautious with that because, first of all, as the price of goods go up, housing, of course, as you know, has gotten, especially in your area and here in Santa Fe, has gotten ridiculous. I mean, people are charging $1,000 a square foot for new construction.
Yep.
So at some point, they're interest rate sensitive, and right now the interest rates are great. But if the interest rates start going up because of the inflation environment and the cost of goods keep going up, I don't know if I necessarily would want to be having my money in that type of level. Commercial real estate may be a little different because it's been killed by the pandemic.
Right.
So you might, this would might be a good time to maybe look at some commercial real estate. If that's something that you, I don't claim to be an expert in commercial real estate, but if you can borrow money now as cheaply as you can borrow,
true,
that would be the way to get involved with real estate, is true, to borrow as much money as you can while the rates are low, and then you can definitely have the ability to do real estate contracts or what have you at a higher interest rate and at least be able to be cash flow neutral, if not positive.
True. No, good point. No, this is all good stuff. Mish, how do folks find you?
At Market Minute on Twitter, best way. I'm there all day long. Also, if they go to my site, marketgage.com. And if you want to see all the interviews I do, including hopefully this one, if we get a link, then you can go to, we have a YouTube channel, and that's Market Gage YouTube channel. We post a lot of stuff up there.
Appreciate it. No, and all of ours are typically up either the night of or the very next morning right on the website, rushtoreason.com.
Perfect. I'll look for it and put it up there.
Thank you very much, Mish. We appreciate it. Have a great night.
You too.
All right, we'll do it. American National Insurance is next, folks, and we all need insurance. Yes, it's one of those things we have to have. It's mandated by law to have that to drive, and you're pretty dumb to not have it, even if your house is paid off. So we want insurance. We want the right kind of insurance, be insured properly, not spend more than we need to, but have the proper coverage. Talk to Paul Leuenberger, my agent, and he'll get you all fixed up. He'll give you a free quote to exactly what you need and whether you're properly insured now or not. 303-662-0789.
Paul Leuenberger with American National Insurance offers a rebate program unlike any other. Every year that you don't file a claim, you get a certain percentage of your money back. Just one example of how Paul Leuenberger, the personal insurance agent of John Rush, keeps your rates so low. He rewards his customers for their diligence and responsibility. Paul can also help you strategize about when to file a claim and when to pay out of pocket so you save more money in the long run. You don't want to shop online for insurance because you have no idea what you're buying. You need Paul Leuenberger with American National, the no surprises insurance agent. Call 303-662-0789. That's 303-662-0789. And ask Paul Leuenberger with American National Insurance for details about his unique rebate program for home and auto insurance. Talk to somebody with the expertise to advise you so you get the coverage you expect.
Ever Accountable is a media tracker that measures your integrity online. With Ever Accountable, you and a friend you choose get a weekly report to your mailbox. That makes you your own big brother. Go to klzradio.com/men.
You've already been through a collision. Now give yourself the gift of a gorgeous vehicle inside and out. Al Sturm and his team at A Good Shop Auto Body continue to earn OE certifications for name brands like Subaru, Ford, and many others so they can get your vehicle back to pre-loss condition with the parts and service recommended by your manufacturer. Now A Good Shop offers full detailing as an add-on service so your vehicle feels like new. Click on the free virtual estimate button now at klzradio.com/collision and ask for a full detailing service, including carpet shampooing for the entire interior or trunk, or upgrade to include a ceramic coating that will keep your paint in shiny new condition. Al and his team want to give every customer the wow factor of a vehicle that feels like new. Mention KLZ in your virtual estimate request for $100 off your repairs. A Good Shop in North Glen and Commerce City. Certified collision repair worth referring.
Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Thanks for joining me. And got a little article that I, not an article, I've got a newsletter. Let me say it that way. I somehow or another have gotten on the email lists of several different liberal organizations, and they send me things on a pretty routine basis. It's actually kind of nice. I get to see kind of firsthand what some of these folks are trying to do. So I got one today that was sent out by, and this particular organization sounds very conservative, maybe would be the right way to say this, but they're not. This is Americans for Tax Fairness. And Mark, I'll be with you in 1 second. Don't go anywhere. Mark Mix. But this is Americans for Tax Fairness. Now, sounds like a really great organization. Yeah, Americans for Tax Fairness. I'd like to be a part of that. I want fair taxes. Well, what this really is a front for those that want to take from the rich and give to the poor. Because this newsletter that I got, headline reads, billionaire pandemic wealth gains of 55% or $1.6 trillion come in three decades of rapid wealth growth. And basically, this is a big hit on those individuals, billionaires, if you would, that have made money either during the pandemic, prior to the pandemic, after the pandemic. Doesn't make any difference. It's a big hit piece on those that have made money, frankly, by doing things that a lot of other folks aren't willing to do. So really, it's a hit piece against the Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerbergs, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, which is amazing because they're eating their own, which I've never quite understood. Why, if you're one of those individuals, would you still want to be on that side of the aisle? Mark Mix will join us now. Maybe, Mark, you can explain that to me. Why is it these billionaires, a lot of them who are lefties, want to stay on that side?
John, you know, I guess if I had a billion, I would help you decide and decipher why that is. But I don't know. These are interesting times for sure.
I mean, let's and Mark, real quick. I mean, we're talking about, and we'll get into what you're going to talk about with, you know, Biden and unions and so on. And Amazon itself just defeated a quote unquote union takeover. Jeff Bezos being a huge lefty. To me, they talk out of both sides of their mouth.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, Bezos' Washington Post is a huge endorser of all kinds of big labor power grabs, and yet, you know, at Amazon, he understands what happens when a private organization comes in and tells you about how to run your company or run a particular facility. And they do tend to get at both sides, and we're seeing that with the corporations as well. I mean, in this, you know, all of the wokeness, if you will, of the corporations. And it really is, I won't say it's interesting because it's not interesting. It's sad in a way.
Yeah.
You know, their customers, they're alienating their customers and ordinary folks who don't pay attention to all this stuff, who are just trying to live their lives and help their families and do what they can do to be good citizens. And yet somehow, you know, because of our past, we're guilty of things that most people don't even remember or know about. And it's really frustrating.
And by the way, everybody listening, if you don't know Mark's voice, he's been with us many times, president of the National Right to Work Committee, and also serves as president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. And, you know, Mark, you know where I stand on all these things, and I'm one that just says that, you know, really unions are one of those things that have their time has passed. We now have enough laws and regulations in this country where really they are not needed. I believe it's nothing more than a money grab in a lot of cases. Most of these unions, and you know this, will just take the money from their workers. They then funnel that into different PACs and campaigns and so on. And all they do is try to push a political agenda, and they're not really doing anything for the little guy that's paying the dues.
Yeah, that's right. And the evidence is getting clearer and clearer about that. You know, the numbers for 2020 came out for union membership, and it dropped dramatically across the board. 13 of the largest unions lost membership. And, you know, a lot of that has something to do with the economy as well. But this notion that somehow they can protect people is really ridiculous. And we got a great example of that in Bessemer, Alabama, at the Amazon plant. Only 12% of that workforce voted for a union, even after the president tweeted back in the end of February saying, you know, you got to unionize down there, and you got to do all this. And it's an 85% black workforce, if I understand the statistics correctly, and only 12% voted for unionization, John. You know, look, whatever you think about Bezos, they're taking care of their employees there. And if you look at some of the anecdotes from the employees that were quoted after the vote, they said, look, they're taking care of us. We get benefits. We get good wages. I mean, the situation's good. We don't want to have someone standing between us and the supervisors, of which, you know, it's just an interesting story and one that continues to play out. But yet, if you watch the big media, you know, everything's about how abusive everybody is to workers. And the fact is, when given the choice and given over 2 months to vote in this union election, only 12% of the entire workforce voted for unionization.
No, I'm glad you said what you just said a moment ago, too, because, again, a lot of the headlines that you'll read, and haven't had a chance to talk about this much, but there were some big headlines out about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, talking about, you know, Amazon workers that were complaining and quitting because of the now, you know, webcams, if you would, or the cams that are in the truck, the dash cams, I didn't say that right, the dash cams that are in the truck that are now also looking at the driver and determining what's going on there and, you know, when they're in and out of the truck and so on and so forth. And, you know, Mark, I guess I look at that and think, you know, if that's what you want to, you know, if you want to be a driver, then that's what they've decided they want to do. And I would venture to guess that as somebody that owns a lot of vehicles myself and have guys on the road on a consistent basis, I know why they're doing this, Mark. And by the way, it's not to punish the worker. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, that's right. And it seems like cameras are everywhere anywhere. You know, if you look at the protests, I mean, people stand around and just film what happens there. Everyone likes cameras, apparently, but no one likes them when they're pointed at them.
And, right.
And you're right. I mean, from a standpoint of control and liability and to have facts about incidents and, you know, union officials, they want to surveil. We've got a case where union officials are demanding that they get surveillance video and all attendance records for a single employee in an 800-member unit up in Delaware. They say they need it to represent the workforce. They've got to find what this one guy was doing at the workplace for the last couple of months because, interestingly enough, John, he filed a decertification petition against the union there, and all of a sudden the union demands that the employer give up every single entry point where he came in, his work shifts, just one individual employee because they need it to represent, quote unquote, the workforce. I mean, they demand these cameras and this accountability as well, but when it works against them, somehow, you know, it's the wrong thing to do.
Right. No, and I'm glad you said that because that's exactly right. And there's a lot of spin, if you would, on these things. And by the way, some of that spin even comes out of conservative organizations that would say, you know, hey, you know, these drivers have the right to quit. And, you know, if they shouldn't have to be subjected to a camera looking at them all day long while they're driving. Well, as an employer, Mark, I would take a different approach to that and say, you know, in a lot of cases, most cases, these are not going to be used against the employee. In fact, in a lot of cases, if there's traffic altercations, things along those lines, this could very easily save that particular employee and even from them getting a ticket and other situations when it comes to accidents. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, I think most of the over-the-road truck drivers these days have that type of electronic logbooks now, and so you know exactly where they are, what their speed is. And from an employer standpoint, I mean, that makes a whole lot of sense because the liability,
yes,
with the claims and the lawsuits and you know, you can be, what, indicted for a ham sandwich? And, you know, it's just amazing, John, that this stuff has to go. And unfortunately for organized labor, they are focused on industrial policies from the 1930s. They're focused on laws from the 1930s.
Yep.
And frankly, to your point, I mean, there's so much that's happened since then that their model of compulsion, their model of force, just can't work anymore. And frankly, the generation coming up, and the Amazon example is a good one. 85% of a workforce is black, that they want to tell us every day that somehow those people are being abused, and only 12% of the entire workforce voted for the union.
Which tells you that they don't want the union there in the first place. They don't want something being taken out of their check and then ultimately, at the end of the day, not getting any of that money back. And we've heard those stories over and over again about people that have paid into the unions forever. And then when it comes time to even be represented, the reality is they're not even represented correctly at the end of the day, Mark. So, yeah, I think people are finally waking up and realizing that, wait a minute, time out. You guys are a dinosaur. You're not needed any longer.
Well, employers understand that too, John, and you understand as an employer that, look, if you don't take care of your employees,
you're not going to have them.
That causes real problems. Exactly. And it's really, I don't want to make it sound too simple, but it is really quite simple. If you want to keep your best employees, you need to honor them and
you take care of them.
Protect them. Exactly.
You take care. Exactly. I mean, you take care of them like you would family or anybody else, Mark. I mean, again, this is not rocket science, and I do think we've finally gotten to a point as a country where, A, we've got more jobs and workers. So, and even with the pandemic and everything that's gone on, we still have more jobs and workers right now. I think around 5 million across the country, Mark, is where we're at. Or maybe it's 3 million. There's 3 million more jobs and workers right now, I believe, across the country. Big number, either way. Let's face it, Mark, as employers, we're still looking for people to come to work. So to your point, if we're going to keep people employed and keep moving forward, we have to take care of them. We have no choice.
Yeah, that's right. And frankly, that's the secret to employee relations. And apparently the folks at Bessemer, Alabama, at the Amazon distribution center down there decided that they were being taken care of pretty well, notwithstanding the outlier stories that obviously that the unions are promoting that, you know, there's all this juice. And frankly, the numbers speak for themselves. They had 2 months to vote, John. It was a secret ballot. It was a mail-in ballot. They got to have their ballots, and over a two-month period, they got to listen to what the unions had to say. They listen to what Amazon had to say. And frankly, that's something that the union says was an unfair labor practice charge for the employer to speak to the employees about the impact of unionization on a particular business. I mean, you talk about a one-sided narrative, I mean, about unionization, when they make these promises they know they can't keep, and we see that now with pensions, although I guess now the federal taxpayers, we all are going to bail out the pension funds that have been misused and abused.
Don't start there.
Over the last couple of, I know, John. I'm sorry. That's right. They got $86 billion in that first COVID bill to plug the hole in these critically.
Which, by the way, you and I both know this, Mark. They were underfunded and having problems long before COVID ever came around.
Absolutely. And that's like the states, like California, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. All of those states had pension problems that were part of mismanagement, not part of COVID. They'd been going on for a decade or two.
That's right.
I mean, and all of a sudden we bailed them out and covered up all this mismanagement and this inefficiency that comes with a private organization managing not only government jobs, but private sector jobs. And that is a union.
Mark, how do folks find you?
They can find us at nrtw.org, nrtw.org. And, John, thanks for the opportunity to talk.
Mark, it's always a joy having you. I appreciate it. You speak my language, and I enjoy having you.
Thanks, John.
Good stuff. Mark, I appreciate it again. You can go find him. You can look him up. Mark Mix, president of the National Right to Work Committee, and he's also the president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. Extreme Auto Repair is coming up next, folks. You want to keep your vehicle in top working order no matter what's going on around you. And you do that by getting it in, getting it serviced, getting it taken care of. And that's what they can do at Extreme Auto Repair. Find them today at klzradio.com or call 303-841-1071.
Go with your gut. You know when an estimate from a mechanic doesn't feel right. Maybe they're telling you to fix a bunch of stuff you didn't even know was broken. Maybe their prices seem surprisingly high. The team at Extreme Auto Repair in Parker will give you a second opinion for free, so you know what's reasonable and what's not. They can typically beat the prices of their competitors, but they won't hold it against you if you decide to go back to the first guy. Either way, you have the peace of mind. The team at Extreme Auto Repair wants to keep you safe and keep your vehicle on the road longer, but they never want to pressure you into repairs that you don't really need. So with every estimate, the team at Extreme Auto Repair will give you a priority list, showing you all of your recommended maintenance items in order from the most to least important. That way, you decide what you want to take care of now and what can wait until later. Free second opinions at klzradio.com/extreme. Promises kept.
All right, folks, whenever you need legal representation, we've got you covered. That's Kevin Flesh, and I mean that, whether it's some sort of an accident, whether you've got, you slipped and fell, you've got issues going on that way, whatever it is, whatever you need representation for, Kevin is there for you. Not afraid to go to trial. That's what he does. He is trial tested, trial ready. I probably don't focus on that enough. He's not somebody that's just going to, basically make a deal with the insurance company to make things go away. He's going to get what you have coming to you, and he knows exactly what he needs to do to make that happen. Call him today at 303-806-8886.
Avoid the pitfalls with Kevin Flesh. Picture this. You're in court before a judge and jury trying to get the at-fault party's insurance company to cover your hospital bills, and the defense attorney pulls out your medical records. Comparing what you said to the police at the scene of your injury to what your doctor transcribed, you've contradicted yourself. You start to get nervous. You don't want to look like an idiot, but you simply don't recall what you said to the police. That was a long time ago. KLC's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law, prepares you for these kinds of questions so you never need to worry about what to say. Of course, the opposition will always try to call your credibility into question. But with Kevin Flesh, you always know exactly how to respond. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Trial tested. Trial ready.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. And I appreciate Mark calling in there a moment ago from our last guest from National Right to Work Committee. And I kind of threw that question at him about the article or the newsletter that I had received. And I wanted to go back to that for a moment and just show you the type of propaganda, because that's what this is, the type of propaganda that gets sent out to their quote-unquote members, mailing list, whoever they happen to be. I don't know how I ended up on this mailing list. But again, if you first look at the title of the organization, Americans for tax fairness. Hey, at its surface, that sounds fabulous. Everybody wants to pay fair, quote-unquote, taxes. Now, the problem with this organization is their view of tax fairness is you not paying any and all of the big billionaires paying it all. That's essentially why they sent this newsletter, if you would, basically hitting on all of the quote-unquote billionaires, which I never have understood are all on their side. They're like the Republicans at times are eating their own. You would think that some of these guys on this list would get tired of that and realize that their own are eating them and they'd switch over to our side. I've yet to understand why those knuckleheads stay on that side of the fence when it's really not in their best interest. These guys are their enemies. They would love these guys to give away, you know, basically give up all of their wealth. Now, I've talked about this in the past before, and I want to make sure that I'm clear on this. In this news or this newsletter, one bullet point is Amazon's Jeff Bezos, almost a double centibillionaire, is what it says, quote unquote, with a net worth of nearly $197 billion, is up 74% over the last 13 months. If he were still married to his ex-wife, Mackenzie, together they would be worth another $60 billion or so, giving the couple a net worth of $250 billion. Now, what this newsletter forgets, or this organization forgets, or is too stupid to understand, he doesn't have cash that's $197 billion. He has some cash, don't get me wrong. He's a very wealthy man, don't get me wrong. But he doesn't have $197 billion in the bank. He has assets, in this case, value of Amazon stock, that makes him worth $197 billion. He doesn't have cash in the bank of $197 billion. In fact, none of these quote-unquote centibillionaires, they call them, have that much cash in the bank. The next one they list is Elon Musk, of course, worth $172 billion. Tesla and SpaceX, he has a lot of stock in. They're up by 599%. Again, Elon will even tell you, he's admitted it, I'm cash poor. He'll tell you that. All of my quote-unquote worth is in SpaceX and Tesla. And there were times, in the case of Elon, where he was writing personal checks to get things done inside of Tesla. Got to hand it to the guy for that. But again, he does not have $172 billion in the bank. His net worth is that, but he doesn't have that much cash. Brandon and Wheat Ridge, you're next. Hello, Brandon.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm good today. How about you, John?
I'm good. Thanks for calling.
So I was kind of curious. This was an earlier segment you were talking about. You were referring to Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, and you were referring to them as leftists. I'm
yes.
curious what makes you believe that their policy ideas actually adhere to that ideology.
I wouldn't say their policy ideas do, but what they do with their money, where they give it, where they donate it, and who they support shows they're lefties. You know, Zuckerberg, for example, giving some $300 million when it came to some of the voting changes we had prior to this last election. It was Zuckerberg's, you know, main goal to make sure Donald Trump didn't get reelected. Would you not call that a lefty?
I think you need to reconsider how political donations and the political system is structured now. Because this is the big issue and a big hot topic with Georgia now, is that people are boycotting and canceling these companies that obviously see it in a business interest, that in the GOP structure and how they're doing the mail-in ballot changes and what they're doing with the election system, it's in their best business interest to stand against these policies and these changes. It's not for progressive policy. It's not
sure
for
it is. Oh, I totally disagree with you. It most definitely is, Brandon. It's all about progressive policies. How do you say it's not? Are you that blind?
So it's not for $15 minimum wage. It's not for Medicare at all. It's not for unionization. It's purely for profit. The economy we operate in is a democratic republic with a capitalist structure.
Yes.
These businesses know that there is money opportunity in opposing these because that generates traffic, that generates clicks.
And by the way, in a lot of cases, that may be true. In a lot of cases, I believe it's not true. You're going to get a lot of folks that don't like what they just did. And frankly, MLB is one of them, where you're going to have people turning off the TV, not even watching it because of what they just did.
Yes, that's true, and they can.
So no, I disagree with you. I mean, they may think that's the case, but I think they're sorely wrong.
Yes, and that's the beauty of America, is that you can choose which corporations to support, you can choose which policies.
But Brandon, real quick, let me ask you this. First of all, have you read the laws and what they actually came up with in Georgia? Have you actually read the law yourself?
I have read through the Georgia laws, yes.
The law, not the bullet points printed out by some news organization, but the actual law. Have you read it?
I've read through the actual law that I found from numerous different sources that was not worded in a way as to lean towards any specific political ideology, left or right.
Okay, so tell me in that law what keeps somebody from voting.
The only thing that keeps people from voting is how congested lines are on the day of balloting, which areas and which counties and cities have early voting so that people can choose either to register to vote in person or to register to vote through absentee or mail-in balloting. And the differentiation there is that they can request that, and now Georgia is going to be a free voter IDs, which is something that, keep in mind, America does not do. You need an ID or a registration, and it is paid for. It is not given by free. But Georgia is doing the right thing, and they are making that free. So if you're going to need voter ID to vote in these counties and vote in Georgia, it is good that they're going to provide people that ID free so that then they can register to vote and we can have these safeguards that people are saying that we need for election integrity. The water in line thing, that makes perfect sense because we often know that people would campaign outside of political
buildings. That's right. That's exactly right. Yes, thank you for saying so.
If somebody hands you food or water and they're wearing a T-shirt, whether it's for Trump or Biden, it doesn't matter. People could be influenced to vote one way or the other depending on the people that they speak to beforehand. Because somebody is not going to just hand you a bottle of Nestle or Aquafina and say, thank you for voting. They're going to say, why are you voting for such and such? What are your beliefs on
that? That's right. And that's why we have laws, by the way, in most states that make that not happen.
Yes.
So, again, I ask you the question, what in that law creates a problem for someone in Georgia voting? Because the way I read it, Brandon, actually nothing. In fact, if you look at it compared to other states, they're going to let you vote on weekends prior to the election, which, by the way, is like I think the first I've ever heard of that happening. So how have they not made it easier to vote in Georgia versus the other way around? My point is all of these CEOs, these corporations are either totally stupid and can't read, or they're politically playing something that they shouldn't be. And again, I think they're totally stupid for doing so.
Well, corporations are doing this for brownie points and good social awareness, because corporations at the end of the day do what's in their best business interest. They don't believe that going against this will be in a bad business interest. They know there's money to be made. It's the same reason as soon as Pride Month comes around that they all change their logos to the flag for LGBT rights, because they know there's money in it and virtue signaling for those points. This is nothing more than a virtue signal for these companies. And to say that they're for progressive policies or anything socialist or even communist for that matter is absurd, because at the end of the day, they're neoliberal at best and they're conservative or libertarian at worst. They're never going to be for actual minimum wage. And the only way you could argue that Amazon is for $15 minimum wage is because Amazon routinely squashes wages and squashes competition in the areas they move into. They would never want to see that work in short term, because in the long term, Amazon wants to be the one store to rule them all, and that's going to be their end game.
Agree. But again, I will ask you, when you look at all of Bezos, the owner, not owner, but the majority shareholder, if you would, if you look at his history when it comes to the left and what he's done there versus what he's done on the right, tell me he's not a liberal?
He's not a liberal, because capitalism is not inherently a left or right political ideology. It's an economic system. And capitalists know.
No, Brandon. Whoa, Brandon. It is not just an economic system. I had the same conversation with a texter earlier. I wish it were as simple as you're trying to make it, but it's not. This involves every aspect of life, not just money. The Democrats, for example, look at the social side of the fence and what they believe when it comes to education and what they've even done there to brainwash America into believing things that, let's face it, 50 years ago they didn't. So don't tell me this is just about economics, because it's not.
What example are you referring to specifically that the Democratic platform advocates for?
I'm not following you. You want me to go through the entire platform of the Democrat Party?
I need you to give me just one solid example that you think that brainwashes or indoctrinates, because I know this from a lot of conservative thinkers on your side of the aisle. And when you're listening to Candace Owens, Ben Shapiro, Steven Crowder, when you listen to any of these people, they love to give you a vague idea to gesture to so that listeners can fill in the blank and then you don't have to elaborate on it. So I want to hear one specific example, and we could go through
the value of life, Brandon. The value of life. I will tell you right now, the Democrat platform devalues life. It does not value life. They may tell you that they value life, but if you look at the underlying things they believe in, how in the world could you believe in abortion and believe, basically, they believe in abortion as a birth control right, if you would? How can you tell me that that values life? That's the first one I'll give you.
Yeah, I wouldn't tell you that it does value life, because the Democratic Party is about virtue signaling, because minorities often are represented through their policies, and so they have ethnic groups that vote for them because they're more preferable to the right. That's the only reason the Democrats advocate or even begin to pretend to be instituting those sorts of policies. So this is the major thing that, unfortunately, the greater vasts and swaths of America don't understand about our political system, is that when you have a two-party political system, they only fight enough to keep the status quo in line. The conservatives are never going to stop talking about cancel culture because they know that's what riles up and feeds their base. The Democrats are not going to ever stop about talking about how bad the Republicans and the conservatives are because they know that's what keeps minorities and smaller groups of people from voting for the other side. So inherently, they're both playing the same game, and they're two wings of the same bird.
And I disagree with what you're saying there, because that's not the case at all. As conservatives, at least I and the people that I associate with, we believe in freedom. Freedom of choice, the freedom for you to go about and do your business daily without having somebody else interfere with that, not being told what to do on a daily basis. On and on we go, Brandon. They are two completely different ways of looking at life. Completely different. They're not one and the same at all. Look at what's gone on through this whole COVID shutdowns and the Democrat governors like the one we have here in Colorado, and now they've handled things versus the ones like Florida and Texas that have done it opposite.
Do you know how left or right leaning Canada and Australia's governments are?
Canada is very left leaning. It's socialist. It's a socialist country, Brandon.
No, Canada has socialist policies, but they are conservative right wing governments. Same with Australia.
Not hardly. Australia, not hardly, Brandon. Not when they tax you at 55% and spend all of your money that way. No, it's not. Not even. Not when you can't go buy a gun. No, it's not, Brandon. I don't know what you've been reading to think that Canada is somehow conservative. Far from it, Brandon. Far from it.
Because I know people that live in Canada.
So do I. I actually had family that lived there, Brandon, and I got to run to break. But, Brandon, go do some of your research on history on some of what you're talking about, because the reality is, especially when it comes to Canada, you're flat out wrong. I'll leave it with that, because you're not correct in what you're saying. Affordable Interest Mortgage is next, guys, and Kurt Rogers would love to help you out with all of your mortgage needs. If you want a free mortgage assessment, just call him today, 720-895-0500.
Take aim. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the asset manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take aim. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Folks, as I said earlier, unlike Canada, you can go buy a gun. You can do that at Franktown Firearms. Exercise your Second Amendment right today. Find them at klzradio.com or 720-770-7777.
Find more guns and ammo at lower prices, only at Franktown Firearms. Everyone says they value long-term relationships with their customers, but the team at Franktown Firearms back up their words with actions by keeping their prices fair and their shelves as full as possible.
Because they maintain good relationships with their suppliers, the team at Franktown Firearms has developed a reputation for reliability, which allows them to keep their shelves stocked during nationwide shortages. Because they always have new shipments coming in, they haven't had to hike up prices, so you can find guns and ammo at or below MSRP. You will go back again and again to a shooting range and gun store where you feel respected, and the team at Franktown Firearms shows respect through reasonable prices and a consistent supply of guns and ammo. Fill out their contact form at klzradio.com/Franktown for specific pricing. Franktown Firearms, where students become friends.
GIA Insurance shops the entire market for the right plan at the best price, so they must be more expensive, right? Wrong! All of that valuable market research comes as a free benefit to you from Paul and his team at GIA. Get more without paying more.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, folks, been a great day today. I appreciate it very much. And yes, please, if you're thinking that Canada is somehow conservative, I've known many, many people that have lived up there. In fact, a lot of them that have come down here because of what's gone on up there. 55% taxes being one of those. So if you don't think for one second that Canada is on the left, you're crazy. Go do some research and figure that one out. And I'll talk about some of the other things we talked about today as we go through the rest of the week. So we'll be back tomorrow. Rachel Keene will be with me. Don't forget, the first or this next hour, it is not a replay of our first hour because it is the National Crawford Roundtable. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.